Well, thanks for the introduction. Thank you very much for coming. I think you did a good job introducing us in the project, so a lot of information is going to be shown. We're showing the first part of the film. And we're going to answer any questions you have. I don't know if you're familiar with Aikido at all, martial arts, in any way. But sometimes I tend to tell people that, and sometimes I choose not to. But I think, you know, the way I produced the film was a little bit counterintuitive to the present culture. So I tried as much as possible to slow down. You know, the life just keeps speeding up, and I just keep trying to put the brakes on and slow down. So what you're going to experience with the film is exactly that intention to stay as close as possible to what I used to feel when I was watching Kurosawa's movies. Mm-hmm. Long, and I could take my time to just savor it. So I'm going to let the film speak for itself, and then we'll answer questions. What do we have?
Aikido is definitely a personal journey for everyone who practices Aikido. And I think it's a path of learning. I'm not sure what else it would be.
I was really fascinated by the parallels between Aikido and its philosophy and its physical movements and the work I do. I'm a sociologist. I'm also a relationship coach. And so I deal with human interactions all the time on a professional level. And I was fascinated by the physical parable of the movements and the way in which the physical movements represented what goes on between people psychologically and emotionally as they're trying to work together, cooperate together, live together.
We relax. And you smile, and your smile eyes, we feel better. We glare at him, he's going to say, what are they mad at me for? So smile, be relaxed.
So people understand it's not just art, you're going to beat one another up, you're here to learn something, and be kind to other people and love other people. You know, you love everyone, you don't love one person, not the other one.
I realized at some point that such a small percentage of the population will ever actually put on a white uniform and go into the dojo on a regular basis, subject themselves to punches and strikes and hits and falls and injuries and all that kind of stuff. But I knew that the principles are so powerful and so generic and universal that I wanted to extend them, to carry them more into the world. How can we take these incredibly powerful, wonderful, beautiful principles, distill them in a way that people could get, say, in a matter of hours?
One of the things that people often do is they don't complete the question. Is this right? Is this right? For whom? For what? So I pay a lot of attention to what the context is. If you think Aikido is for street fighting, you'll do a different move than if you think Aikido is for healing or meditation.
So you get good in Aikido the same way you get to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice.
What do you think?
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wanted to present the practice of martial arts from that level of learning and applicability to how we can change ourselves, not necessarily from a self-defense point or teaching techniques or any of that. You have any questions? Yes.
How old is Sensei that you feature in the film from California?
How old?
Are all of them from California?
No, Puri Sensei is from Wisconsin.
Who except the Romanian one?
Romanians is in Europe. Paul Linden, who ended, is in Ohio. Knut Bauer is in Illinois. And Jamie, well, now is Nevada, but it's also Israel, so it's kind of a mix. Yeah. But there are more focused towards the West Coast, I think. I know, yeah.
Is there a dojo in Manhattan?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, first of all, you have, in New York, you have, there's a few Aikido organizations in the country, and they came from different students of Osensei when they came here. But Aikikai, which is the Honbu Dojo, the main organization in Aikido, direct lineage to Osensei, has Yamada Sensei here, who is the head of the United States Aikido Federation, and it's here in New York. But you have a slew of dojos, and each dojo will be different, each teacher will be different, and if you want to practice or experience, I strongly suggest you go and observe a class. You don't have to take a class, you just watch it. And you'll get a lot from the teacher. You'll get to understand their approach. Is it more physical? Is it more on the softer side? Is it more towards self-development? Some of their classes may be all-inclusive, it's open up to people with all sorts of disabilities. So it all depends on your interest. So, like a yoga class, go and try as many as you can in different places before you feel like if it's something you want, if it's something that calls on you.
So most of them, they suggested they are doing from the early age onwards.
Yeah.
What if nobody has any experience and they want to start new, how difficult it is to get? Because if I heard some of them say getting the injury and all, nobody wants to get out of job because this is like to get the practice you need and then build upon it. So do you recommend for the people?
Absolutely. I recommend common sense. You go to dojos, and again goes exactly what I said. You have to choose one that fits your body and your personality and your age and your physical shape. You can get hurt in Aikido. A lot of dojos will say they pride on not getting hurt, but you practice for an hour, you practice for an hour and a half, and your back aches for the next 2 weeks. And if you practice once a month, that's going to stay with you for as long as you do that. If you practice 3 or 4 times a week, your back aches going to go away. Muscles are going to get conditioned. Your entire body starts to respond differently. But at first, you walk into a dojo. Like I said, the first thing I recommend is observe a class. Don't take it. Watch it. And it will tell you what it is. Then talk to the teacher, to the main teacher in the dojo, and say, this is who I am. This is what I need. This is what I can do. This is what I cannot do. Do you have a class for me? Most of them are incredibly flexible in accepting new students and being easy on them. But again, it depends. Some of them are more competitive than others in terms of physicality, and some are not. Yes?
You had mentioned the Yamada Sensei. He's my sensei.
Yeah.
And you had asked if you were interested in where it is. It's on 18th Street between 6th and 7th Avenue. I'm not advertising, just...
No, that's good. No, he's...
True. But any teacher, with a beginner, the best teachers are the ones who remember when they were beginners and what a beginner needs. And so my own experience, I know that the teachers that we have at our dojo are very, very, very conscious of what people need. And you know, like you said, Bogdan said, you know, you go, you observe a class and see what you need. You see whether it's something that looks like something you're interested in. And I can say for one thing that at the New York Aikikai, which is where Yamada Sensei teaches, which he started in 1964, there's not much talk that you saw in the film, like philosophy. He's basically just practice. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's no discussion. You can discuss with your colleague, with your people that you practice with, but he's just practice. He doesn't talk about any of the things that you saw here. And not that doesn't invalidate any of this. This is all beautiful stuff. It's real.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. I'm going to make a point. A lot of people may go in, and that's one of the things I noticed. I work with some group of ages, you know, especially kids and youth with special needs. And a lot of times you have this situation when somebody walks in and they are trying to be at the level that they see. And it's very important to be honest and say, you know, I'm not comfortable doing this, and always express it and not try to appear as if you're already conditioned, because that will mislead probably some of the other people in the dojo and practice with you a little rougher just because they think you can. It's always very easy to back up and say, can we go easy on that? That's all it takes. So that kind of connects with it. Right? It's a safe practice, a very safe practice. It just requires just a little bit of, you know, like just being aware of the elements.
If you have classes, like my son, I want to enroll him, but he has a prescription classes, so he can't go without, like in this particular.
There's a blind person in this movie. Did you see it?
Just
one of the person featured in this film is blind. Literally can't see. All he sees is like flashes of white. And all of his responses are based on the tension that happens. Yeah. So, yeah. But it has to be stated. You know, it has to be known by especially by the teachers and by everybody who practices there. Then it's all good.
Did you say that? There's more of the film?
Yes, there's another 35 minutes. When I mentioned Kurosawa, I wasn't joking.
So for the remaining 35 minutes, is it do you address other reasons for entering into a practice like Aikido or world martial arts? It seems as if a lot of the conversation that was happening was in a more than idyllic sort of entering within the training. They were either children that grew up within the Aikido culture or adults that kind of fell into it as a hobby that grew into a lifestyle. In my experience, I'm a practitioner myself, a lot of people go into it for the reasons of trauma, because they have intact and they are looking to better equip themselves, and that can go various directions. Do you address that later on in the later half of the film, or do you have any thoughts on that?
A little bit. It is addressed, yes. But like I said, I made a conscious two choices. I made one of them was to not show any Japanese teacher, as you noticed. And then it's not out of disrespect at all. It's on the contrary. I just wanted to show what we did with what they offered. And the other one, I didn't want to present it as a self-defense system, because, again, from my own personal experience, so take it exactly as I say it, it could be incredibly misleading to think that you can go practice for a week or a month or 2 months or 6 months and know how to defend yourself in a street situation. In a situation where you're literally attacked viciously, your nervous system will collapse if you're not trained at that level of stress. And so
necessarily was a, I'm sorry, I mean to cut you off. That's not necessarily what I was referring to. I wasn't saying I see the piece as a philosophical take on the Aikido practice as a whole and the parallels that it creates within our lives and what it can possibly do for us. And I was wondering, and because in the practice of martial arts and our practice as human beings, we live life through understanding the world in contrast. I was curious to see whether or not there was any person that had entered this realm of Aikido from a, lack of a better term, a semi-violent background, and what, how they implemented that philosophy into their own life. I was just curious about that. Does that make sense? I'm not trying to...
No, I understand. It's a little bit. Paul Lindem, for example, specializes and works only with trauma.
Okay.
That's what he does all the time. And he's, I mean, look him up, Google him up if you have a chance before he goes, because he's 70-something, Parkinson, his body is not responding anymore. This is one human that anybody should meet, in my opinion. And then, you know, there's a couple of them who came from combat, so they have real violent experience in terms of combat and how they transition and how that exists in their body, and they practice and it helps teaching. But it's not as much in the film. But there is some. So there is, in, you know, it goes towards that. It goes towards the value that... It's not just a self-defense physical, but it's a self-defense in terms of mental, in terms of self-integrity, if you want.
Following up, last question. Sorry. Would you then consider doing a follow-up piece about the transformations of individuals living the Aikido philosophy or mentality?
There are 10 more films that are being released in about probably 2 or 3 months. Each one of them featuring one of these 10. Mm-hmm. Paul Lindem segment alone, it's worth everything you can think about. Yes. I'm working on them. They are,
I've heard of him. I think he trained in Japan, came back, he was in the 80s. His 80s, he's still practicing.
Yeah. Pretty sensei is really... I mean, they're all amazing. And I didn't touch hands with all of them. But with those who I did, they are, you just stop and you're thinking, okay, I got a long way to go. Yeah.
Would you consider Aikido to be a counterintuitive discipline in the sense of instead of resisting the opponent's moves, like karate, you integrate with the flow of the opponent's moves to hold one of the senses?
Yeah, I practiced Goju-Ryu, Okinawan Goju-Ryu, since I was 12. And when I met Paul Lindem, I felt like I hit a wall. His approach basically froze my knowledge. Because my nervous system was not registering what he was saying. So that was so counterintuitive. When you say counterintuitive, I experienced it in my body. It took me quite a while to understand what he's doing, and then the value and the therapeutic value of it, not just for me, but for everybody else that I work with. So yes, it is counterintuitive in a way, because we're working with the nervous system. Again, it's physiological. We're not talking anything spiritual here. We're talking seriously how the body responds, and it responds in a millisecond. And you can't change that millisecond. You can change it afterwards, but that millisecond of reaction is it's instinctive. It's evolutionary. Millions and millions of years of work to survive, and so you training to actually not counter, but you training to go the other way of your survival instinct. That's the difficult part. To make that connection in your brain, not in your mind, in your analytical mind, but in your brain, so your nervous system reacts. And again, Paul Lindem can actually lead someone. The people you saw that you were laughing, those are the first time they actually touched Paul Lindem. So it wasn't rehearsed. They didn't know what was going to happen. We just asked for two volunteers. They showed up and they did that with Paul. And he can do it in half an hour. He can trigger something in your body and then you're like, okay. I was frozen for months after I met him. I just couldn't negotiate it. Three of these people are my direct teachers. Each one of them with three different approaches. And when I worked with Paul, I told everybody else, I'm like, guys, I'm not sure how I'm going to embody these three ways because they're neurologically different. I have to do three different things to move like that. So counterintuitive is, yeah, clear. Yeah. Cats do it all the time, though. Cats do it. So if you have a cat, you learn this kind of Aikido from a cat in a few days if you pay attention to that. You touch their fur and the way they maneuver is exactly what Poland is talking about. You don't feel any resistance, but they get what they want, which is quite impressive. Yes?
To me, because I haven't studied martial arts, to me in the whole documentary, one was, of course, the gentleman with Parkinson's talking about, you know, yeah, how to say, yes, I want to be pushed, or yes, you can hit me. That, to me, was a very powerful segment. And another one was, I don't know if it's the gentleman was Romanian or something. He was teaching children next to the ocean. Mm-hmm. I think for children to put down an adult, that must be psychologically very powerful.
Yes, it is.
To understand the concept that I know a technique where I can put down an adult, because for a child, an adult is all powerful. And suddenly, when they're doing this and they're putting down the adult, that must be for them something really extraordinary.
Yeah, it is very empowering. And he's Dan Ionescu has, besides the fact that he was my first teacher 35 years ago or so, when I wasn't ready for Aikido, that's for sure. He's developed a program that, 4,000 people. It's huge. I mean, amazing what he did over generation and generation of kids. So I know him for 35 years. And I know adults that are now, that have been with him since, I don't know. So, yeah, it's very empowering indeed for the kids. It's one of the best things, because also not using a strike-to-strike response or a combative response. I always, you know, with the kids I teach when I work, I just say, at the end of the technique, I want to be able to tell you, whisper to you in your ear, let's go for an ice cream instead, and then I can put you down. I need that moment in there, because that allows that conversation to happen and their body to change or my body to change. And it just, we never go to that level of confrontation. We stay on that completely different. Again, I also bring up, and I don't want to be misleading, in a situation of stress, when somebody comes at you like a bulldozer, your heart rate is going to go up, your pulse is going to change, your oxygen levels are going to change, everything's going to change. So you need to train for that. Practice, yeah. But you can practice to be responding in that way and more. Yeah.
Can you elaborate a little bit about the differences between your three different teachers?
Yes, Dan Ionescu's style is very painful. It's very direct, very practical. The Romanian one with the, and so it's very. It's very intuitive, so any moves that you would make, you will meet a counter move that's painful. So no matter where you're going, it's painful. And he talks a little about pain as a very good teacher, you know, and sometimes I feel like maybe he talks about it too much. But indeed, and he does it later during the documentary, shows with a kid, using pain with a kid, and a kid keeps on smiling though it feels the pain, but it's the kind of pain that's leading. It's very educational, and it's not the kind of pain that then you feel down, you know, on the contrary, it kind of lifts you up. And I've only seen two teachers doing that, and he's one of them. and the other one is not practicing Aikido, is practicing something different. But so that's Dan Ionescu. So again, it's very painful and practical and very direct. Knut Bauer, he's a direct student of Akira Tohei, who was very skinny, was smaller. His techniques were sharp, incredibly precise and economical. Knut Bauer is the same, but he made it somehow softer, and you have no idea what's going on with you. So instead of the pain, Knut Bauer is just as direct, just as efficient, and you have no clue how you end up in all sorts of positions. And then you have Paul Linden, who's my third teacher, and I'm with him, and it's hard to explain. Because I was only able once to strike him sufficiently efficient enough to send him back a few feet. And he's asking me, come and hurt me. And we're friends, and he knows I practice Goju and Karate for many years, and he asked, strike me as you would strike. And it took me a while to be like, okay, I'm going to do it. And just like, Christ, just move out of the way. And I think only one time, and he had protection, he took one of these things and he said, okay, now do it. And that's when my strike actually went in. But he moves in a way that it's in the film, and it's in the segment that he explains afterwards. He trained because of Parkinson to detect micro movements. Because of his body shake, he had to recalibrate his entire perception of space as he moves, sits down, comes back up, and sometimes he can't come back up. And he asked me, put that in the documentary that I have Parkinson. He asked me, he's like, make this film, you gotta put that first. It was like a clause. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna put it in specifically. So he's training to respond to very minute movements and very minute intentions. So by the time I start moving at him, he's changed my mind. But that's all I can say, and it's not magic. It's based on perception, the speed of my brain able to change to what just happened with him. That's kind of how I can explain it. There's no magic there, but it's all. But again, it's the need that he had in his own body, in his own situation, that led him to this. You know, like we have somebody here, Yamada Sensei, who is known for his incredibly powerful techniques.
Big techniques, right there.
Yes, and probably can agree that he's becoming softer.
Excuse me?
He's becoming a little bit softer. Yeah. Some of the teaching that I've seen is...
Just 80. Yeah. Turned 80 years old. Yeah. He's still traveling around the world teaching.
Yeah. So, each teacher is...
Still powerful. I don't know about softer.
And I also think that they get more powerful with age, and... For two reasons. One, they make it so much more efficient because of practice. But the second reason is very physiological. We're talking about tendons, ligaments, the strength in these two elements alone. A muscle doesn't need to work anymore. It's just how your body's conditioned to project power. And that's the key. Yeah. Well, I hope you... Yes?
Question. When did you begin filming this footage, and how long did you edit, and how has Carol been involved in the film?
Oh, Carol's my co-producer, yeah. We worked together before in a different film, on one of her documentaries, and she was kind enough and trusting enough to co-finance and hold my hand and push me forward, which is very good with this film. When I started, maybe, my goodness, it's already, wait, three, maybe 5 years? Mm-hmm. 5 years or so. It took me about a year to edit again, there's more editing in the background that for the rest of the segments going on. But it took about a year, almost a year, to plan to get them all together, to be able to put them down on the schedule and not have them leave. And then maybe editing for about a year. Yeah, the editing was very difficult. Yeah.
Is there a particular style that aims to teach spiritual growth, or is that question not within the ken of martial arts? Or am I getting through? No.
Yeah, I'm trying to calibrate my answer. So I cannot speak for any martial art, but what I can say again from my experience, so I came from being a kid experiencing sufficient amount of trauma and abuse and being violent, switched to now teaching and working with kids who have the same problems. And I love it, and they love it, so it's a good thing. It's a full circle, I think. But I think that the spiritual component, it's a personal thing. You know, I can't speak for any martial art or for any particular style that would just focus on that. I think they include it, they can incorporate it, and they may not. This film, when it was started, the first thing I asked all of them was, it was a simple request, and I said, I need you, all of you, to stay grounded and not talk about spiritual matters or spiritual development, because I want to show this to parents, I want to show this to people who just start, and how will they perceive and how will they be invited into a learning journey. And I think the spiritual component, it's a personal choice. There's no particular style of movement that would lead to a higher spiritual level, in my opinion. But that's just my experience. You have to have a practice of spirituality. You have to have a personal practice of incorporating more than just the physical practice or just a breathing practice, or I think it's much more encompassing, you know. But there are teachers who teach including these elements during a class. They will bring up concept of universal energy or harmony with the universe, and it resonates with some, doesn't resonate with others. And that's why I say spirituality is a personal choice. I can't speak for any martial art. I've seen it, but I can't speak for them. You know, you have, because I don't think it's propriety. I don't think it belongs to one particular style or school. I think it comes from the teacher. It comes from the practice itself, and it's requested by the student in a way. You know, if we're trying to grow more into a spiritual aspect of it, yes, you can practice Aikido, but you can also practice one of the hardest or harshest karate style in the world, which is Goju. Practice pretty rough, but you can practice it in a way that's almost spiritual. But that's because you change it as a person, not because the style itself, it's designed with that. Did that answer a little bit? Yeah. I hope you're going to watch the rest. You know, you go and see that, and it has a lot more information on it. And you can stay once you sign up, or you connect with that, you'll find out when I release the other segments. Again, there's at least, they're all very important and they're all very relevant, and they go in much more depth in terms of practicality, but without putting a plug out there. But Paul Linden's is outstanding. I mean, it should be in every adult education as early as possible. But he can't show it to a kid, for example, because he's not going to really understand. But he teaches kids, but he changes the language completely, so it's understood by their level of understanding. So, yeah, sure. That's why I'm here. Okay. Ask away.
Which dojos would be important to look at in Manhattan? I mean, not having to go out to the West Coast.
He might be much more better informed than me, but like I said, there's value everywhere. And whoever's going to teach in New York comes from one or two very clean, very good lineages. Nyabara Sensei has done a really awesome job at keeping this a very stable system and very traditional, I could say traditional. Yeah, but you have anywhere you would go, and there are programs that Aikido that do classes for special needs, for kids with special needs. I know there's class, you have to Google it. Eventually you can email me, you can contact me through our website, and I can point you to a few people. But it's like music. You will go in, you will watch a class, and your body is going to tell you, this is it or this is not it. That I can promise you. It's exactly like music. If you watch it, your body's going to tell you that, okay, I got to go home. That's not it. I got to go to a different dojo. And you'll find the right place. Yeah. Because there's value. There's value in each one of them. So, yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Facebook and also the website that you built for this documentary?
Yeah. Well, I'm going to start with a question my 7-year-old son asked me when I said the film is done, and he came to me and said, "Is it really done?" And I said, "Yeah, it's really done." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Well, because you spend the last 3 years there in front of the computer almost, you know, so it took a long time." So as much as I wanted to be more active with the Facebook page, I got sloppy a little bit. I don't put updates that much. I try to get back to my kids more now. The Facebook page is just Living Aikido Life in one word. So you go Facebook and then find Living Aikido Life. And there's a few like trailers and segments with the other people, and you can stay in touch, you can stay connected, and you'll find out right away as soon as I release something that's I'm going to put on Facebook on that page. And then the website is changing. Which leads me to where this project is going. First of all, the film and the materials that I'm producing are free to public schools. All they have to do is ask. Or anybody buys the film that doesn't buy the film and says, I think this film could be good for this school, and they'll have it. So that was from the day one before I started. I said, I want this to be free to schools. So far, like 3 schools, but I haven't done myself a lot of legwork, which I intend to. But the project is going to start moving towards a different direction now, which it focuses more on working directly with and hands-on with parents and families and kids and teachers. And so I'll be traveling pretty much the whole country and start doing small workshops and hands-on work and kind of centralizing what Aikido can offer and then leading people to where they could go and practice and learn. And we have a few more segments coming up which are more like conversational. They're not, again, it's not an, and it's not methodology in terms of Aikido technique, but interviews from people who have been teaching kids for decades. And they're going to share their experience for parenting, for educators. Mostly because the world is getting really aggressive and stressful and intense. Let's just put it like tense. And there's more and more need to have a way to respond to it in a way that de-escalates that tension. So that's where I'm taking this project. That's my goal, you know. Somebody tells me, you know, where do I learn self-defense? And I said, you go boxing for 3 months, you learn something, and then go to Wing Chun, and you learn self-defense. Aikido is not for you, if that's what you're looking for. Aikido takes a long time to actually apply it, unless you stumble upon a dojo that does Aikido. It's a very traditional, older forms. It's very direct and painful, like Danyunescu. So I'm focusing more on a more, not spiritual, but on a more, and not even philosophical, but on a more, how do you learn to learn? How do you discover that movement can be used for learning and for physiological changes? That's my focus, yeah.
What about this goal to make this sort of philosophy available to on the platform that you're utilizing? Like, what kind of helped you navigate to this path as a way to say, I really see the value of these philosophies in everyday life and I want to make this accessible? Like, how did you come to that conclusion?
I would not be here if I haven't met my sensei 35, 36, 38 years ago. My life would have not been what my life has been. I would not be the father that I am. I would not be the, you know, guide or teacher, whichever you want to call it, that I am. I wouldn't, no matter what my inside nature was, my external environment was going to take me in a bad place. And I was pretty much going with it. And I was 13 years old when my first teacher took me in. For 2 years, he trained me one-on-one. He did not let me go in a dojo. That should tell you what my personality was like. It took me 2 years to walk in a dojo and practice with somebody else. And he was like almost 7 foot and just... And the two things he told me, he said, if you're going to stick for 6 months with this martial art, it's going to stick with you for the rest of your life, and it's absolutely correct. And second was, if I see another bruise on you again, I won't teach you another lesson. And I started to learn how to run instead of fight. Because I love this man, so, you know. I feel like there's no way I'm not going to pass it on. You know, I'm trying to pass it on to my kids. They don't want it yet, so I'll wait. You know, they're young, 5 and 7. They do rolls with me. They come to classes and they roll with the other kids. And, you know, but I'm not going to push it. I know what pushing means. I know where it leads. But, yeah, I'm not going to stop. I'm going to, if I can pass it on, I'm going to pass it on. And it's not mine. It was given to me when I needed it and under the very clear contract that I need to change. Well, I signed that contract basically. It was a moral contract, if you will. So that's what it is. And that's why I thought, the first thing I thought when I wanted to do it, I said, I actually want as many kids or as many teachers or as many parents to know that this could be a life-changing situation. And again, it doesn't have to be Aikido. I'm very happy many of them said that throughout the film and in all the rest of the thing. It doesn't have to be Aikido. It can be any other martial arts. It can be any other sport. It can be any other activity or practice. It takes you away from a path that doesn't lead to a good place. And it just gives you an option. It gives you at first an outlet and then it gives you a system a structure, and then later on it gives you support, and then later on you become it, and so the crutch goes away, everything goes away, and you can stand on your own in a different way. So I think it's important, but it could be horseback riding. It doesn't have to be Aikido.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming.